Once the skates come off, it's game on for us. Leafs Nation postgame with Gord Stellick and Mark Osborne on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Plekanec works to the half wall. Centering pass in front. Oh, what a great save. That another big save by Bernier. Puck comes into the slot. Plekanec shoots. That's stopped in front by a body. Comes back to the blue line. Markov shot. Subban scores.
There's no goal on the play.
All right, well, it's the right call.
Boy, those goaltenders stick up for each other all the time. That was the disallowed goal, as you heard here, as we welcome you to Leafs Nation. Postgame, brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers, Gord Stellick, Mark Osborne, on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We know a lot of you have been listening to Toronto Blue Jays baseball. For those that aren't up on it, it is a 3-3 tie right now between the Leafs and the Montreal Canadiens with seconds left in overtime, so we wanted to get on the jump here. We'll wait till the game is actually over to start entertaining any phone calls to talk about game number 82 or the 81 before that or in the off season. But Ozzy, all in all, entertainment value for a nothing game for the Maple Leafs, but a game that means something for the Montreal Canadiens. And by getting this point, they've really basically done what they wanted to do.
Well, Gord, 727 other games were very similar to the one that we've been witnessing tonight. Yes, 3-3 in overtime coming down to the final seconds, as you did mention. Always a spirited affair. And, you know, for two teams that are going in opposite directions, I guess you would commend. And there's a lot of things to enjoy about the game tonight on a number of fronts. And, you know, let's wait to see what the outcome is. But a nice night for Casey Bailey, getting his first National Hockey League goal. I think maybe you brought him a little bit of luck because I'm sure you you went down after the morning show and said, kid, you can do it.
I did. I did. I said it every other game. Yeah, this is the first time I didn't.
Anyways, you know, so a spirited affair and some of the other scores throughout the National Hockey League has been decided as far as Eastern Conference. And of course, we won't get into it specifically, but the Pittsburgh Penguins did defeat the Buffalo Sabres 2-0. So they, in fact, are the eighth seed. So, you know, stay tuned as far as what the first round playoff matchups will be.
Yeah, earlier today, Ottawa Senators defeating the Philadelphia Flyers. So they get in, as Ozzy just mentioned, Pittsburgh in, Boston Bruins out. And as we look ahead, and we'll welcome your phone calls, but reports out there, one of them by Damian Cox, that major house cleaning by the Toronto Maple Leafs, President Brendan Shanahan, not just Peter Horacek, but others to be involved. Kyle Dubas, Mark Hunter are safe, but won't be general manager if Dave Nonis is turfed, which we'll find out Monday. I got to think he likely will be. But anyway, Brendan Shanahan will make that public on Monday. What else we got? Steve Staios will return to a personnel role. And Sean Burke and Rob Blake are two players on Brendan Shanahan's radar, apparently, about some positions with the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Two former players, and one of which, Rob Blake, with the Los Angeles Kings, and then, of course, Sean Burke, assistant to Don Maloney and goaltending coach. So an interesting position that he does hold as far as on the managerial end of things, on the coaching end of things. I know he's been highly thought of, I guess, and if he wants to make the jump as far as any type of managerial position, there's the history that he's had with Brendan Shanahan going back all the way to their New Jersey days.
Well, and he, weeks ago, was given permission to seek out other employment. And, of course, he's a guy been given all kinds of credit with working, whether it was Ilya Burzgalov, Mike Smith, you name it, that done. And before that in Colorado, right? Was it in I get my goalies mixed up. But anyway, in Arizona for a while. And it was a little peculiar that he, you know, given his relationship with Don Maloney, that he was looking to go somewhere else, but we'll find out. So Monday we should find out a few of those things. Maybe not many. The big one will be the fate of Dave Nonis, and then I don't know what it means about the assistant coaches. And it's like I said, Brandon Pridham's another assistant general manager. I would think if those guys are going to survive, he should survive too.
Well, absolutely. He's part of his job description, Gord, as you know, is all about the cap and managing the cap and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, as we continue to look through the first round of the shootout here, Galchenyuk does score on Jonathan Bernier and Tyler Bozak gets stopped by Carey Price. And by the way, in that third period, Carey Price, two breakaway saves, one on Phil Kessel, one on Nazem Kadri. So stay tuned.
And Tyler Bozak was as good a shootout player as there been for a couple of years. And last couple of times as befits. And Montreal just gets, okay.
Slap shot, top shelf.
You're not big. We're going to talk about things. And Jonathan Bernier is one of the subjects that you've been a little less enamored with. Is that safe to say?
Maybe I was a little bit vocal before going on the post-game show. That's all. There's parts of Jonathan Bernier's game that I do like, and I still have a lot of hope. And by the way, that's the end of the game. I'm wrong. The Montreal Canadiens defeat the Toronto Maple Leafs in a shootout. And so 4-3 in a shootout.
4-3 shootout victory for the final game for the regular season for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Of course, Montreal Canadiens heading on the playoffs. So we're going to figure out all the playoff formations and everything else that is going on.
Well, let me just get back to your question about Jonathan Bernier and my thoughts on Jonathan Bernier. There's a lot to like about his game, and yet there are a lot of, maybe there's some question marks now, and it's hard to definitively make a decision, I think, on Jonathan Bernier going long-term based on the team that plays in front of him, their lack thereof of defensive acumen, shall I put it. And yet there's a part of Jonathan Bernier's game that kind of bugs me a little bit with some built-in excuses, or he always has some things to say as to why things did not go well. And that's the part that kind of irritates me a little bit with Jonathan Bernier. And he has not been very good for quite some time and goes down to defeat on the final game of the season. And in some respects, I think we were hoping for a Maple Leaf win. But at the end of the night, entertaining game, and yet I think, generally speaking, the Leafs get what they deserved for the entire body of work this entire season. They go home with a loss.
Leafs Nation postgame brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers, Gord Stellick, Mark Osborne on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. And we will welcome your phone calls, 870-0590, star 590 on your cell phone network, 1-888-666-0590. But let's take a look, starting off with things that are going on out of town. I'm sure people, it's the final games. I'm sure people heard what happened today. But let's start Ottawa, Philadelphia. Ozzy will give them all the out-of-town scores to get off to an early start.
Well, absolutely, Gordon. In that first period, 6 minutes into the period, on the power play, Mark Stone, and what a story he's been for the Ottawa Senators, his 25th of the season. Then Philadelphia, early in the second period, Matt Reed, his 8th of the season, ties it up. Before Jean-Gabriel Pageot, his 10th of the season. What a line that's been. The third line for Dave Cameron's team with Curtis Lazar and Condra. Condra is the other player. So a bunch of young guys getting a lot of work for Dave Cameron's team. And then the clincher, basically, Mark Stone. What a great individual steal just inside the Philadelphia blue line. His 26th of the season. And the Hamburglar, the final two games of the season, Gord, gave up only one goal in Philadelphia, in New York against the Rangers. And by the way, has yet to lose on the road in regulation. So what a story for the Ottawa Senators, for them to get into the playoffs with that big win in Philadelphia.
Yeah, his first time at Madison Square Garden, and only the President's Trophy winners. And he wins that game, and they added to their President's Trophy lead tonight with a 4-2 win over the Washington Capitals. Kevin Hayes is 17th. Derek Brassard is 19th. Dominic Moore, he hangs around his 10th, and Jesper Fast his 6th for Washington. Stanislav Galiev his 1st, and Alexander Ovechkin, goal number 53. How many guys you said scored over 40 or more goals? Is it 4 players?
Only three guys. Yep.
Wow, and he's got 53.
Yep, 53. Let's go on to a meaningless game as far as the Calgary Flames are concerned, but the Winnipeg Jets beat the Flames 5-1 in an afternoon match. Calgary opened the scoring. Michael Ferland, his 2nd of the season, and Sam Bennett, the former Kingston Frontenac and first-round pick of the Flames last year on his very first NHL shift, picked up an assist. Then it was Drew Stafford, his 18th, tied it for the Jets. And then 4 more goals by the Jets in the third period. Frolik is 19th, Stepniak is 15th. Adam Lowry, goal number 11, and Matt Halaschuk, his 3rd. So look at those guys that Winnipeg acquired, Drew Stafford. They've all fared into being significant contributors to the Winnipeg Jets. And, of course, life in the playoffs and a sign of things to come. But 5-1 Winnipeg defeats Calgary this afternoon.
And it means Vancouver gets home ice advantage, right? The Calgary Flames don't get home ice advantage. And who would have thought this is a nothing game? Boy, two teams. You talk about being sour. In Los Angeles, 4-1 win over the San Jose Sharks. For the Kings, Tyler Toffoli is 23rd. Braden McNabb is 2nd. Marin Gaborik is 27th. Andy Andreoff is 2nd. Brent Burns, the lone goal, number 17. It's a 4-1 win for the Kings over the Sharks. And certainly, you know, the Slava Voynov situation, for example. I mean, you miss a stud defenseman, and that's tough to play, tough to fix.
Well, you know
anywhere.
What? Yeah, you know, they filled it with Sekera, picking him up from Carolina, and yet, yeah, I think too many games for this organization over the last number of years. It just, I think, maybe finally caught up to them. And, you know, Larry Brooks, excuse me, Gorda, from New York, interesting article, I guess, he had written just about the players and the way in which I think towards the end of the season got fed up with Daryl Sutter. And anyways, stay tuned as far as some of the fallout from that. But that was what went on in Los Angeles. Anyways, St. Louis 4-2 final against the Minnesota Wild also earlier. Yaskin is 13th of the season for St. Louis. Tarasenko, goal number 37. So he's back in the lineup. Yuri Lehterä, his 13th, were the scores for St. Louis in the first period. Scandella, his 11th, replied for Minnesota. That was 3-1 after two periods of play. Lehterä, again, his 14th, put the Blues up 4-1 before Zach Parise, goal number 33 in the last dying seconds of the game. So 4-2 St. Louis beats Minnesota.
Big game tonight, 2-0 shutout victory for the Pittsburgh Penguins. Marc-Andre Fleury with the shutout. They beat the Buffalo Sabres. And Brandon Sutter, the guy that Jim Rutherford traded from Carolina to Pittsburgh, where he now resides as the general manager, scored both goals to get the Penguins in the playoffs on the last day of the season, his 20th and 21st.
Over to Florida, where a nothing game. The Panthers defeat New Jersey 3-2. The Devils open the scoring in the second period. Jordan Tutu, his 10th. David Boland, the former Maple Leaf, gets his 6th. And then in the third period, Huberto, who's been very good on a line with Jaromir Jagr, and I believe it's Alexander Barkov, but nonetheless, Huberto is 15th of the season. Jagr scores also on the power play, his 17th. Severson for New Jersey was the other scorer for New Jersey. So 3-2, Florida defeats the Devils in Sunrise.
2-0 shutout victory for the Detroit Red Wings over Carolina Hurricanes. They're hoping to get that kind of goaltending in the playoffs. It was Mrazek with the shutout. Landon Ferraro, his first, and Joachim Andersen, his third, were the scores.
Well, you know what? A game that just ended. I do believe the Blue Jackets have defeated the Islanders in a shootout. Let me do a little bit of refreshing here, Gord, just for your benefit, nobody else's. But anyways, you know, of note, certainly going into the final game today, who is going to win the Art Ross Trophy? Tavares, Crosby, Jamie Benn knocking on the door. But anyways, let me give you the scores in this game. Cam Atkinson, goal number 22, opened the scoring for Columbus. Oposo is 18th, tied it. So 1-1 after two periods of play, and then a lot of goals in the third period. Bolton for the Islanders, his second. Tavares, goal number 38. So that was 3-1 Islanders. Then Columbus, Dubinsky is 13th. Wenberg, his fourth, made it 3-3. Then Kuhlman, goal number 15th, before Hartnell with his 28th of the season. A buck 35 left in the game, forced overtime, and then a shootout. And I do believe that Columbus has won that game in a shootout. Correct me if I'm
okay,
wrong.
Okay, and what do you have for Boston-Tampa Bay? I last had 2-2.
It is 2-2 going into a shootout.
Okay.
So do you want – I'll let you pronounce the Tampa Bay score.
No, we will come back. Let's get a couple callers waiting. Let's get Sean in Mississauga joining us, of course, 870-0590, star 590 on your cell phone network, 1-888-666-0590. Hey, Sean, thanks for hanging on. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I just wanted to quickly, you know, I've been a fan for many years, and I don't really buy the whole tanking thing. And I can still put the jersey on until the end of the year and watch the boys play. But this year, it was different. I think the group of guys on the ice were just, and that's what I kind of want to ask you guys from a player's point of view. And maybe I'm wrong about this, but like this group is so unlikable because they can, to me, they clearly don't care. And they didn't care from about halfway, you know, three quarters of the way through the season. Have you ever seen a roster or been in a locker room like this where guys are kind of giving the bird to the crowd and not saluting the crowd and kind of just saying, just get me out of here for that long. And have you ever seen something, a roster like that? Is that something that's only going to happen in Toronto?
Ozzie, as an ex-player?
Well, all the things that he just did describe, and certainly I think it was highlighted by the lack of respect shown by the leadership group in dishing the fans, certainly after they had lost that colossal game to the Nashville Predators 9-2. I mean, that was a calculated decision that, whether it was Phil Kessel and Dion Phaneuf, whatever, I mean, it was the wrong decision to certainly make, and that just, I think, further solidified the challenges that this organization and the fans have gone through in watching good players, some skilled players, and I guess you qualify it by what Tim Lewicki said last summer: we have talent, we lack in character. And I think that's been generally the issue. They talk about this team and how well they get along with each other or how well they like each other. I guess I would certainly beg to differ because you take that onto the ice. It doesn't finish on the ping pong table. You know what I'm saying? It goes on the ice, stuff with them not defending their captain, and a lot of push and shove. And anyways, I think we've talked it to death, but I would certainly agree with the caller that there's this has been a very unusual situation here. And I think Brendan Shanahan, whether he's realized it sooner than later, I think everybody's on the same page now moving forward.
It's interesting. Peter Horachuk had to verbalize it with the give a bleep meter. Mm-hmm. And he thought it was just a 1 week thing to get the team going. And instead you kept looking and go, boy, there's a malaise out there. And no doubt about it. I'm not an ex-player, but as far as seeing that, I think this is the worst year. I think there's been a lot of bad years. Yep. I mean, you start comparing, what does it really matter? Bad years are bad years. So you're splitting
it's
hairs.
It's been the worst decade. But, how about that? How about the worst decade in Maple Leaf history? Would you agree with that?
That's a good point. I think it is. Absolutely.
Mark, how many times has this team made the playoffs?
No, and also anyways, the young prospects that aren't there. But anyway, appreciate the call. We want to go our friend John in Pottageville. Hadn't heard from him for a while. Hey, John, how are you?
Not too bad, Gord. Mr. Oz, how are you doing tonight?
We're good.
Well, it's the end of a very pathetic season, like you're just commenting on. I can't remember one that's been any worse than this, and I go back pre-67. One for your book, Gord.
Okay.
first of all, Phaneuf. I heard this week that he was very disappointed he didn't get to Detroit, didn't get traded there. I wish he had said that before he signed the big contract on the long term. Because I doubt very much, even if he wanted to go to Detroit, they wouldn't pay him his money that he wants now. Now we got Kadre. He's got one more year left before he's a free agent. I'm sure the Leafs are going to take him to arbitration again. He's going to get paid X number of dollars. The first thing I would do if he has a half-decent season next year, halfway through, I trade this guy. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, to Nazem Kadri, I agree. I think you can't get bullied into feeling you've got to sign him to a long-term contract and fear that you're going to lose him. It's a risk you take, but then you can look at it as an asset that you make a trade before the deadline. So, there's too many contracts already there that you feared would go somewhere else, and Kessel and Phaneuf were two last year that could have been unrestricted free agents, and, that's what it took to keep them here, the going rate or whatever. And I don't know what it is in Kadri, but I don't know, Ozzie. If he's going to play hardball negotiating, then I wouldn't be afraid to go to salary arbitration and see what happens after that.
Yeah, that's not going to bother me going to arbitration at all. But just getting back to John's comments in regards to Dion Phaneuf, I never heard that he was complaining about. Was there a report that he was complaining that he did not get traded to Detroit? Is that fact or is that just rumor?
The report is that, he was disappointed. Yeah, he was keen about the deal.
Okay.
On trade deadline day, he was one of the more disappointed players. So he has not come out and said that, but Dion Phaneuf was excited about the possibility of that.
Okay, so he's basically checked out. I think the organization has checked out. I think we've seen Dion Phaneuf, barring something just beyond what we can imagine. Dion's played his last game as a Toronto Maple Leaf, correct?
Yeah, but why so many other guys check out? That would be it. And as John says, again, you look back at what may have happened and whatever, but
Anyways,
he signed here, so it happened. Whether he could have got less money in Detroit if he'd waited or whatever, I don't know.
And you know what? We've said this all along about Dion Phaneuf. I mean, there are parts of Dion Phaneuf that we could live with Dion Phaneuf. I think he makes a good first pass. I don't think he's a very good defender when it comes to the ability to defend. I think defending Gord as a defenseman and a team in general, and he's the captain. You lead by example, and far too often Dion spends a lot of time just looking around, standing around, and that to me, if I'm going to challenge him a little bit here, I don't know Dion Phaneuf. I've heard a bunch of good things. You've spent a little bit of time with Dion Phaneuf, and yet the leadership in question, it's not his fault he was given the captain. I think he's done the best he can. I think he's tried in many respects, but as best he can, he's gone beyond his comfort level. But so I don't necessarily fault him for that. It is what it is. And at the end of the day, he shouldn't have been captain, but that's all spilt milk as far as I'm concerned with a guy like Dion Phaneuf.
No. And as I said, he took it with pride and tried his best in that way. But you talked in the hockey sense and articulated about where he could have shortcomings. And of course, when he's on a better team, who knows how that'll develop. But I said, if the clock has struck 12, you got to move the leadership group, which starts with the captain and your number one center, Tyler Bozak. Like, I just think you got to get more from those two spots that they're givens.
Well, you know what? That's your thought. And I know you've talked about that, quite a bit. I wouldn't disagree with you whether that happens or not. Certainly remains to be seen. But let's get back to the comment about Nazem Kadri, because that's what John was talking about.
Yeah.
Dion Phaneuf, then Nazem Kadri. What happens with Nazem Kadri? Again, remains to be seen. How many years in the league has he spent now? He's turning 25 years of age. And again, analytics will say, he should be playing with Phil or JVR and all that kind of stuff. Again, still trying to find himself as a committed, and I'm talking about committed. I want commitment. I want a guy off ice. I want a guy that wants it, not a guy that wants to tell me he wants it and say all the right things. Or certainly say a bunch of things that I look at or I hear and I go, that's just foolish. That's just foolish coming out of a young man's mouth that I guess has not been mentored properly or taught properly. There's a self-opinion about himself. I don't mind that coming in and having a swagger and all that kind of stuff. But again, the best players are best players because of a lot of the other intangibles.
And Phil Kessel, Nazem Kadri, to me, are two guys that should I either go with Gary Roberts or someone comparable? You should come back and you should show.
Well, they've tried that with Naz, with Gary. Okay. How did it work?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Maybe somebody else.
We don't need to go down that road.
Let's go to Nathan in Thornhill. Hey, Nathan.
Yeah, hi,
you guys. There?
Hi. There's no way I would bring back Phil Kessel. I would try and get the best deal for him. Maybe with Calgary. I think Burke still likes him. I don't know. I'd like to see a guy like Mason Raymond back with the Leafs. I think he's a very good center. I don't think you can trust Kessel to bring him back. You don't know what you're going to get, and I think it's done. I think he's done in Toronto. I really do.
Yeah, well, it's an interesting one. He's one of the guys I have coming back because I just think besides this year, you always got 30 goals, and you know what kind of player he is, and you have to get a better leadership group around him or him being less significant as part of the leadership group. To me, it just seemed like he was the key guy on Snubgate. It just seemed it. And I look back at that as a microcosm of how things, how I perceive things in the dressing room that way. But I would have him back, Ozzie. I just think that's a guy you can't get good market value for him. And you just bring him back and see if things can get back on track.
Well, exactly. And here's the thing with Phil Kessel, because you and I would agree, you can't find players like Phil Kessel. The question remains, there's aspects of Phil that you think he does care, and he shows it in some ways, defending Dion Phaneuf, being frustrated, whatever it is. We haven't had an opportunity to see Phil Kessel play with a number one center for a long period of time. And is Phil interested to be a part of the solution moving forward? Only Phil can answer that question. If he's had enough, if he sees the domino start to fall, if his buddy Dion gets traded, you've mentioned Tyler Bozak. How do you think Phil? You think Phil's all in after that? And if he's not all in, are you feeling okay about, we'll keep Phil in our organization, and he'll just have to live with it because we paid him a lot of money, and he'll eventually deliver, or we'll bring him on to our side.
Well,
Do you think he's part of the rebuild?
I will give him credit, hoping he has professional pride that, you know, you go out.
Hopefully. You think he's had professional pride?
This past year, I don't know what to make of it.
Come in question.
Certainly.
Big time.
Absolutely. Let's go one more call. Tyler, is it Tyler? Hey, Tyler.
Hey, gentlemen. How's it going?
We're good.
You know, you guys are talking about how Dion's probably on his way out of town. And as a Leaf fan, I don't want to see a long period of time without a captain being named. And I'm here right now to say that my vote is for Roman Pulock. That game when he got the puck in the face and came back with something like 13 or 14 stitches on the inside of his mouth and something like 20 on the outside, like a zipper. When he came back to the bench, there was a lady who was sitting in the front row, and she was horrified. And I know that kind of sounds morbid for someone who has never played the game, but his teammates looked at him and said, holy smokes, that is a guy who I respect and I will go to war with. And with Dion probably moving out of town, I just want to see somebody tough and someone who the room really respects. And that guy, when he talked, I can guarantee you after that game, the other Leafs listened. And you guys said that Kadri is might be on his way out. I agree with you 100%. You can't pay that guy any more than, $4 million tops, and he wants closer to five. With a guy like Peter Holland making $750,000 next season, that sounds like a heck of a bargain for me. And maybe we're getting Dylan Strome, and he's a 6'3", 190-pound centerman coming up too. So no big push for me to sign Kadri. Let's see what these young guys can do. And hopefully, if the balls tumble right, maybe we'll get lucky and get McDavid. What do you guys think?
Well, we'll find out next Saturday. I'm glad it's over next Saturday. It's really, when you look at the odds, the Leafs actually have more of a chance of falling to fifth because of all the teams behind them that could win the lottery and get the number one pick. So the Leafs, I had it computed something like, well, let me get it right, about a 50% chance, about a 40% chance of picking fourth, 10% chance of picking first, and about a 50% chance of moving back to fifth.
Holy smokes, man. My head is spinning right now trying to figure this all out.
Well, people, you're trying to slot players in it. And we're back to desperate times means everyone's, or a lot of people are honing in on this pick as being an instantaneous help for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Unrealistic.
Don't the Los Angeles Kings have a percentage in order to get the first overall pick?
Yeah, San Jose as well. Boston. They got like 1%, 2%, 3%, something like that. They do.
Anyways, let's get back to what the caller was talking about. What was he asking us?
I don't know. He went on about a lot of different guys. He wanted to know about Dion Phaneuf, about Captain Roman Pulock. I'll agree with that.
Okay, you know what? Here's the thing, whether you agree or don't on this whole thing. Of the offseason last year, Leafs recognized they needed to bring in a bunch of players, add to or change a little bit of the makeup on the back end. So they brought in Pulock. They brought in Stefan Robidoff, right? As far as at least some form of grit and some form of leadership. I mean,
right.
Stefan Robidoff, and he'd be the first to admit that he probably wasn't able to lead as much as he'd like, because when you're not in the lineup or you're hurt or you're healthy scratch, you don't have the voice inside the dressing room that you, I think, normally would get. Roman Pulock, based on just his play and his play alone, I think he provides some leadership, but I don't think he's a captain material inside that particular dressing room. And then if you're a new player coming in and you want to change a bit of the culture, I think it's very difficult to do it in light of when you got a guy already wearing the C.
That's what happened too quickly for Phaneuf. He was here a couple of weeks.
Would you have nobody wear it for a while?
Or what would you do?
Yeah, that could be a distinct possibility. Look at the team that we just lost to tonight. Do they have a captain? No, they don't. They wear the
Carey
A.
Price.
No, but they wear. Yeah. They all have A's, and so you're not going to put a person in position to be the C unless it's the right person, and that's clear. Look at the days in which you and I were there. I mean, Borre wasn't the captain. I mean, after Rick Vive was traded, there was no captain until Wendell was ready for it, And then they gave it to Wendell.
No, Rob Ramage had it 1 year.
Okay, Rob Harold, before. That's right. You're right.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, Gord.
And there was about 6 years without somebody wearing the seat.
Exactly.
Because Ricky, so you know what I mean? Stripped before he got traded.
But if you think about when Rob Ramage did come in, and I know a lot of people are saying, well, you know what? He's probably the most, not the highly thought of guy when it comes right. to iconic captains sure. in the history of the Maple Leafs. And yet Rob Ramage was an excellent captain and a great person. And so, yeah, after Rammer left and then Wendell eventually became captain, he was a great example and he was a real good team guy. And you were there for Rob Ramage. And anyways, I would not give it to anyone unless it's clear as to who that person might be.
Okay, but if you have to pick one.
No, I'm not picking. I'm not doing that. I'm not playing your little games.
Well, I'm going to play my own game. Roman Polak, I would agree. A good, safe, like Rob Ramage, interim type.
Have you talked to him? Do you know anything about him? Is he articulate? Does he lead inside the dressing room? Yeah, the play on the ice, but you know what I mean? Like a captain embodies a lot of things, especially in this city.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I'm going to take control of this show and go to break right now. As okay. as the designated captain on this, we'll come back. And the season that was, it's a 4-3 shootout loss to the Montreal Canadiens tonight, but we're talking about the 81 games before that and looking ahead to a busy Monday and off season. Gord Stelnick, Mark Osborne, Leafs Nation postgame, brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590, The Fan on demand.
It's your post-game workout. You're listening to Leafs Nation post-game on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Holland looks in front of the goal. Back to the point it goes to Phaneuf. He sends it towards the net. They score! Casey Bailey has his first NHL goal!
Well, one of the positives, that was the call of Joe Bowen. Casey Bailey making it 2-1 for the Toronto Maple Leafs' first ever career NHL goal from Dion Phaneuf and Peter Holland. And we'll hear from Dion Phaneuf in a few minutes' time. The thinking is that's his last point. That assist is a member of the Toronto Maple Leafs. It was a 4-3 shootout victory for the Montreal Canadiens over the Toronto Maple Leafs as we welcome you back to Leafs Nation postgame, brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers. Gord Stelnick, Mark Osborne on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. First, let's talk about the Art Ross Trophy. Unbelievable turn of events in the final moments.
Absolutely, Gord. And you're talking about a number of players that were vying for that going into the final day of the season where all 30 teams were, in fact, playing. So you can talk about guys like Voracek. And, of course, Tavares was leading Crosby a point behind him. And then Jamie Benn. So the Sabres lose to Pittsburgh 2-0. Sid the Kid gets nothing. The Islanders with Tavares, I believe he got a goal and an assist. In their game earlier this evening. And Jamie Benn without Tyler Seguin. This was almost like a Dylan Strome without Connor McDavid. And Jamie Benn comes up with 4 points. 4 points. And the final point of the final 2 points occurred with the net empty. Okay, so the net was empty. He got a goal, and I believe a hat trick was scored by Jamie Benn. And then the assist, I'm understanding this correctly, that on the Cody Eakin goal with 9 seconds left, it hit his skate and went over to Cody Eakin. So I guess he really eked it out. But 3 goals and an assist. Hats off to Jamie Benn. What round was he picked in, Gord?
Second round.
Incorrect.
Third round.
Incorrect.
Fourth round.
It was either fourth or fifth, and I'll get that factual.
Well, I know. We'll have them handy, buddy.
I'm going to get that to you.
I had it earlier when I talked about Mark Stone and those guys and Hoffman. That was a fifth and sixth round pick.
I know. It's the year of the fifth and sixth rounders.
A couple of notes. Colton Orr played 6 minutes and 6 seconds in his final NHL game.
What was the atmosphere like there?
Fifth round pick, by the way.
How did it feel? How did it feel in there? How was the building? Was it rocking?
I'll tell you something. We'll talk to Chris Johnson in a few minutes' time, and Peter Horchuk, apparently a little emotional, they're saying, as far as him talking. Yep. Dion Phaneuf sounds like he was alluding to expecting this to be his last game. And Eric Brewer got hurt, too. He was ticked at Yemelin about a little bit of a low shot there. And, you know, that's like I said, one thing about
when you're out of it is you don't want to get injured. Unfortunately, some of the guys played like that a little too much over the last number of games. But fifth-round pick, Jamie Benn.
Yeah, fifth-round pick, and he was drafted while playing in the BCJHL for the Victoria Grizzlies. So, and a remarkable run.
Absolutely. He is the Art Ross Trophy winning.
Winner. Winner.
So twice, Boston to Columbus, Columbus to Dallas. So it was a second-round pick, or it was a fifth-round pick that was traded a couple of times. So those throw-in fifth-round picks worked out well in this case for the Dallas Stars. Damian Cox reporting, major house cleaning expected with Leafs next week. Won't be just Peter Horachuk. I would think assistant coaches are probably wondering what's going on. Future of Dave Nonis will be announced Monday. Mark Hunter, Kyle Dubas staying, but neither will be GM if Nonis is dismissed. Also, assistant coach Steve Staios will return to a player personnel role. And according to Damian, Rob Blake, Sean Burke are two executives on the Toronto radar for Brendan Shanahan.
Okay. So, you know what, as far as the assistant coaches, which obviously you're going to hire a head coach that will have total autonomy to decide who he wants his assistants
you
to
think?
Be. Why wouldn't they? Well, why wouldn't he?
Last while, they've always seemed to had they've had somebody that was approved more by management.
Well, I'm telling you what, if you're going off a top dog, you want your own staff and you want to handpick your own staff. Do you not? That doesn't mean that, you know, a guy like Steve Spott would not fit in well with whoever you decide on becoming the head coach. Because you know what, I mean, being an assistant coach it's work, but.
Okay, but
it's not difficult to be an assistant coach. Put it that way, Gordon.
Okay, but what do you? Okay? You're hypothesizing if certain guys come, that could mean certain assistant coaches are more attractive to stay, right?
Well, absolutely. If the decision has already been made that you're moving Stevie Staios out of his position back to what he was doing before, and you keep on hearing the great job that Steve Staios has done with the young defensemen in Morgan Riley and Jake Gardner, so isn't that kind of odd? You keep on hearing all the good things that have occurred with him, and now you've officially decided to take him out of that position. And anyways.
You know what's odd is hearing good things, and I'm not knocking Steve Staios, but, like, look at the result. At the end of the day, the season was a disaster. The last half of the season was especially a disaster. So I don't even think you can.
So you can't really judge the coaches. Can you unequivocally say that they did a very good job with this group? We don't
Absolutely
even know what
not.
That means.
You can't. You can't. No. And I think later on you'll find out, or maybe this is. I don't even know if Brendan Shanahan is going to spend much time on it, because is it really relevant at all? He felt that there was a coaching move, which he has to be accountable for. I mean, Brendan Shanahan has to be accountable that he made a coaching change, and I like Peter Horachuk, but it was a disaster. Mm-hmm. Not just on Peter Horachuk, just what happened.
Wouldn't you like to get Randy Carlyle on with us right now and say, take us through last summer when you interviewed again, remember?
Yeah.
For the coaching position, how was it sold as far as you staying, you being given these type of guys, which I don't, in some respects, I don't think Randy would have had an issue, but maybe he did, but had no choice in the matter, and saying, okay, we'll do this. I'm willing to come back. I still think I've got something to squeeze out of these players, which he did. It was proven that he did. Things with a different voice behind the bench from a defensive standpoint with Peter Horachuk didn't necessarily change, did they? The overall team concept, you know, Steve Spott got himself off on a bad note, I think, with the whole Phil Kessel controversy. And, you know, nonetheless, I know we're just looking all the way back with all of the various things that occurred in a most unusual, you know, season. But it gets more and more unusual when you think about what a disastrous season it was and some of the decisions that were made that did not lead to success. If anything, it went further south, right?
Yeah. Well, they finished with 11 wins in their last 51 games. That's a staggering number. One road win since January 1st. I mean, these are staggering, staggering statistics of futility when you look at it that way. You know, it's funny, all the assistant coaches, as well as we talk aloud about it, I think of Mike Kitchen being like the one guy for it's forever. Okay, there was Mike Murphy there with him and different guys there with him. There's been seems like 100 assistant coaches the last 10 years. Does it not seem that way? I mean, you know, Brian Burke did the same thing to Ron Wilson, said, you're staying, but you got to get rid of a couple of assistant coaches. And he brought his own guys in, and Scott Gordon and Greg
Cronin. And Cronin. I mean, and then there was...
on and on and on. Keith Acton was the one guy here forever.
Yep.
But it just seems like there's been an incredible number of assistant coaches.
Okay.
For better or for worse. Yeah. I don't know what to make. It's kind of like a football. I mean, the teams have all gone like the NFL or CFL now with the quantity of assistant coaches. You're kind of hard pressed to. That's why a guy like Dave Cameron to be such a difference maker in Ottawa, right? To stand above the crowd and move into that role.
Well, and how many teams or where could we look at a successful assistant coach that was an assistant coach in the organization has gone on to be named the head coach and have a positive effect? It's a rarity. What Dave Cameron was able to do is a rarity.
Well, I'm already going back way back to
Larry Robinson.
Larry Robinson in New Jersey. Roger Nielsen in Vancouver when Harry Neal got suspended. And Roger Nielsen moved up from assistant coach to head coach and took him to the Stanley Cup final. Otherwise, we'll think of a few that way as we look ahead to, Jamie Benn winning the Art Ross Trophy. Got 19 points in his last 7 games, back-to-back 4-point games in his final 2, and he wins the Art Ross Trophy. We'll come back with the playoff matchups as well, what we have so far to get you set up with that, and an emotional Peter Horachuk and a Dion Phaneuf, probably for the last time, talking as the Maple Leaf captain. More coming up on Leafs Nation postgame. A 4-3 shootout victory by the Montreal Canadiens, by the way. Brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers. Gord Stelic, Mark Osborne on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Demand. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on demand. The game may end, but the analysis never will. Now, Leafs Nation postgame with Gord Stelic and Mark Osborne on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
They asked me to do whatever they asked me to do, I'm going to do it. And if it doesn't work out for me, and obviously this is going to look bad on me, I think people know the situation that understand. So this is not an easy situation you step into. You try to change things. You try to stand up and be the person that should be there. And I believe in what I do. I believe in my leadership. I believe in my character. And it looks bad, but I'm still going to be moving forward and doing the right things when I, hopefully, in the next situation.
Well, Maple Leaf head coach Peter Horachuk, and predictably not coming back next season. He's addressing that. Sounds a little bit emotional about things. And Ozzie, Gord Stelic, Mark Osborne, welcoming you back to Leafs Nation postgame, brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Chris Johnston's been our man from Sportsnet, sportsnet.ca, all season long. And I've been asking you about the crowds before. Let's forget the crowds. Let's talk about the dressing room, the coach, the players, what it was like.
I would say the best probably way to sum it up was that I think everyone kind of realized, what they missed here. And, especially the players. Dion Phaneuf was very emotional when he met reporters and acknowledged when I asked him that he did feel today that it might be his last game as a Leaf. And, I think that it, sometimes when you're in the middle of a situation, a stressful situation, as these guys were throughout this year, you do things that you regret. And I do believe ultimately a lot of these guys are going to regret the way the season played out because this team is nowhere near as bad as what their record shows. And they've really kind of wasted a year in their career. And as Ozzie and any former player can tell you, that career goes by awfully quick. And you shouldn't, waste those opportunities when you have them.
Chris, what would you think, or what is your opinion as to why these players in general did not respond to Peter Horachuk? For all intents and purposes, you go back to Randy Carlyle and some of the things I think that Randy adjusted in or gave in to the players as far as maybe treating them a little bit different. He was too hard on them. And then you get a voice behind the bench that was all positive, and yet the players, the record speaks for itself. They did not respond. Why do you think that was?
Well, it's tough for me to gauge, although I can tell you I had a discussion, a pretty candid discussion with a veteran member of the team who just thinks that Peter was too nice. Mm-hmm. And he didn't say that as a criticism. In fact, he said that it's a shame that they had kind of perform so poorly under him, because, you know, I do think he did have the respect of the group, but this particular player believes at least need a bit of a hard ass as a coach moving forward. And that, I mean, it's tough to project because we don't know, you know, who the players are going to be, but if we operate under the assumption it's a similar core, just for argument's sake, you know, he felt that those guys don't know how to win and that they don't play, you know, a good enough sort of competitive game to do so. And, you know, Peter Orczech himself alluded to it in his comments after the game, you know, basically saying that individuals don't like change. And, you know, I think he had a difficult time getting through to some of these guys. And let's face it, we have a roster composed of a number of players who've been here throughout some disastrous collapses the last number of years here. They're all on long-term deals. They all make big money. And, you know, I think that those guys weren't able to find solutions individually and then not as a group. And I do think that's why, you know, most of those players will be considered or shopped around to try to be traded. And that's kind of where the change comes from. But, you know, I think ultimately we had a core group that didn't respond to what the coach wants. And I think that really was just playing two-way hockey. I mean, the Leafs were able to have success, as we saw in the Randy Carlyle era, when they traded chances because they have players with such offensive skill. But, you know, they weren't ever able to play the type of game that the best teams in this league play. And that's, you know, hard at both ends of the ice.
Now, would this player have been one of the ones who complained about Randy Carlyle being too hard?
Well, he never did so to me. And so I'm not sure. I mean, I didn't, to be honest, I didn't hear from that many players that Randy Carlyle was too hard. I'm not saying that didn't exist, but that wasn't something I heard myself from them. But, you know, I think what we've learned kind of in hindsight is that Randy Carlyle maybe correctly judged what he had with this roster. And, you know, his job is to get wins. I think he had them playing in a way that they could do the best they could with this team. But, you know, ultimately as an organization, you have to look at the big picture. And they weren't going to win anything of consequence playing the way they did, basically trading chances all night, giving up a lot of shots, relying on goaltending, hoping to win 5-4. That's not really how the game's played right now. And I think that's why the change was made. And even though, obviously, winning 9 of 42 games under Peter Horacek is an abysmal record. It's put them fourth last in the league. I think that the changes were made with an eye on the big picture, and now we'll see if Brendan Shanahan can stay the course and be patient and do this thing the right way, because it's going to take time.
I want to ask you, just as we chat about different guys there, you mentioned Phaneuf, a little bit emotional, Horacek as well. Damian is mentioning that Brendan Shanahan's going to announce Dave Nonis's future on Monday and a number of other things. What's the sense you get? I mean, everybody's there now. What's the sense you get?
I'd be surprised if Dave Nonis is back. You know, I think you can't go through this type of season and not it's a tough one. I just don't – he's been here the entire time, 2008, working, you know, first with Brian Burke and then obviously having the main job himself. And you know, he built this roster, at least had a pretty hearty say in it. And this team massively underperformed. I mean, this isn't the Buffalo Sabres, where the plan all along was to finish this low in the standings. I mean, the Leafs were talking about a playoff spot, and here they are with 68 points, which is a difficult thing to do in the three-point game era, especially when you have, you know, the type of players the Leafs do. I mean, this was a failure. And, you know, just for that reason, I'd be very surprised if he's back. But, you know, I guess we'll have to wait and see. I just think that the change has to happen there. You know, sometimes there's something to the fairly or not the kind of pound of flesh type of idea that, you know, for at the end of a season that went this wrong, I think sometimes as an organization you got to come out and kind of sacrifice someone. And I think that the cuts will go deeper than Dave Nonis. You know, you have to think that scouting is going to be talked about. There's been a lot of buzz about that, kind of behind the scenes whispers, and I do think the change is going to continue. But this is an organization that actually has had a fair bit of change since Brendan Shanahan took over. It's basically an entirely new front office. Obviously, I think we're going to be going through a coaching search here this summer. I wouldn't necessarily expect any of the guys that was behind the bench tonight to be there, you know, come October. So the change is going to happen. And, you know, it sounds like, based on Damian Cox's report, that we're probably going to hear about it on Monday.
Yeah, you know what, Chris, and again, just, you know, we're kind of speculating here, and this is just, you know, discussion amongst the three of us, and a number of names have been thrown out there, you know, Sean Burke, Rob Blake, as far as maybe, again, being a part of a group or a committee, Mark Hunter, who has not been here the entire season, successful at the junior level, and not sure if this is enough experience for him to legitimately become a general manager and then go out and be part of the group hiring a coach. So the cart before the horse. It's certainly going to be very, very interesting on how all this does get assembled. I mean, it will get assembled, and yet I'm sure it's going to be up for debate on the route in which they take, and certainly the way in which they go about it, which comes first.
Well, for sure. And you know, one thing that stands out about that front office, and that includes Brendan Shanahan, is there's not really a lot of experience in it, especially if you remove Dave Nonis's, you know, position, if you're working under the presumption that he'll be replaced. I mean, you don't have a lot of NHL management experience in that group. And, you know, I think that that is tricky. I mean, it's not a small thing. And, you know, this new front office has gone about trying to do things a certain way. I think that particularly now in the sport that there's an openness to new ideas, and I don't think everyone has to come from a specific background. I do think that is important, but you'd have to think that they would bring in some of the experience. And then the next question, which I think is the most important, is what type of person wants to come into a front office that's already built? Because, you know, I'd have a tough time imagining that they're going to replace Kyle Dubas or Brandon Pridham, Mark Hunter, the guys that have been brought in just now under Shanahan within the last 12 months. So if there is a change at the general manager position, it's going to be someone who has to kind of fit in and be part of the group. So, you know, it's not an easy decision, and I think that's probably the most complicating factor. I mean, if Dave Nonis stays, perhaps it's because, you know, from all accounts, you know, it worked pretty well this year with everyone, and Dave was part of that. And I would think that would be the biggest reason to keep him is that he has that experience. He's been around and he's shown that he can work with these guys. But again, I just, my gut tells me at the end of a year like this that your GM doesn't keep his job.
Phil Kessel, have anything to say today?
Nope. And I don't have much to say about him. I mean, honestly, I can't explain what happened to him this year. I mean, I do wonder if he's injured. Might at least provide some context to what really was the worst stretch of his entire NHL career. I mean, the one thing, for all the debate we could have about Phil, he's been a very consistent player in terms of the offensive numbers he puts up. And he was on that stretch again until early January. But from there on, he was in an awful, awful way. And you know, he's one of the biggest offenders here, is the team's highest paid player. He's one of those guys that I do think, upon reflection, I don't know when it will come. It might not be for 10 years till he's sitting on his dock and maybe reflecting on his career as a whole, that a year like this one will stand out. But this group, again, I just don't feel that. I mean, the losses are one thing. I it's hard to say this of an athlete, but you just wonder if you know, these guys quit for a portion of the season or didn't quite give it their all, because it really doesn't add up when you look at their roster, the lack of winning that they did. And I do feel that Phil's one of those guys that didn't perform well enough. But as I say, you know, I have to imagine he is injured, which would be a mitigating factor. But, you know, we haven't heard from him much the last few weeks here. And maybe we will on Monday when the team cleans out its lockers.
Okay, Chris, I can't let you go this final game of the season without getting your final thoughts on one particular player, because I've been having this ongoing Twitter debate in the last few minutes.
I told you not to get engaged.
I couldn't help it. I got sucked.
That's rule number one.
I know.
Of Twitter.
I got sucked in here, but anyways,
the guy starts bashing me. I mean, like, geez.
The suggestion here is, and again, your thoughts on Nazem Kadri. Could he in fact be a number one center on this team moving forward? The analytics will suggest that he's a better fit with a guy like Phil Kessel, James Van Riemsdyk. Your final thoughts on that particular debate?
Well, I have to say that I do think that the late for practice 3-game suspension changes things a little bit, and that's an off-ice issue. But, you know, it does make me wonder if he's one of the candidates now to be moved. I mean, for sure, I think he's a second-line center in the NHL and a capable one. But, you know, I do think that he's going to be, what's the best wording, sort of tarred as being part of this group. And I'm not sure, so sure as I was, you know, a couple months ago that he's the answer at that position. I mean, he's still relatively young player. He's put up decent numbers, and but I don't see that fit now. I think this is going to be a reimagining of the organization, to be honest. And you know, I think we can almost move past trying to think about, you know, will he and Kessel be together? I mean, there's no guarantees that one or both of those guys will be here come September. So I don't think he's the solution. And the reason that there's going to be that decision needs to be made is, you know, he's due a contract this summer, and he has the numbers to get a pretty good deal, and it's going to be a deal that buys some, you know, presumably would buy some unrestricted free agent years, meaning he's probably going to make between $4 and $5 million just on market value. So before you make that kind of commitment, I think you have to be sure. And you know, I think the Leafs are rethinking their position on Nazem Kadri at this point, and as a result, I have to as well. I mean, I think on the ice, he's shown it he's shown growth, but it was a tough end of the year for him, and I do think his time is likely going to take him somewhere else.
Well, it was a great end of the year, a great beginning of the year for you. We always appreciate, outside of joining us, it's been fabulous, but also all the stuff you break and the information and that. So we look forward to continuing through the playoffs. Our show continues on Saturdays as well, so hopefully we can get you the odd time.
Yeah, that'd be great. I'm heading out for the playoff chase now, and I should mention I had made contact with Randy Carlisle this week, and he says he's feeling refreshed after 3 months off, and he's looking to get back in the game. So there's a lesson there. There's life beyond this season for those that were associated with it, because I know it was a tough one on the players and the people that work on this team, and I'm sure the fans out there listening.
Well, I think you'll be in Las Vegas as a candidate for the Jack Adams Trophy, given the way things went. I mean,
could be
for quite a turnaround.
Didn't hurt his reputation, that's for sure.
Yeah, and I hope he doesn't chirp like Ron Wilson did once the money runs out. But we'll see down the road. Thanks so much, Chris.
Thank you, guys. Good job this season under trying circumstances.
Appreciate that very much, Chris Johnson from Sportsnet, Sportsnet.ca, joining us. You want to hear Peter Horchuk?
Yeah. We sure. There's a lot of Peter Horchuk, so we got enough time before the break.
Let's do it, and we'll talk. And when we come back from the break after, we'll hear of Dion Phaneuf. But the two biggest talkers and most compelling final game as head coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs. It was a 4-3 shootout loss to the Montreal Canadiens. Here he is after the game for the final time, Peter Horchuk.
I thought they responded. I mean, they played hard. I mean, we first, you know, we get up, score first. You know, that we turn over a puck that, you know, should have been a good transition out of the zone, and that turns into a goal. They get a 4-on-2, which initially I thought it was offside. They tell me that maybe it wasn't, but, you know, and then we turn over the puck with 20 seconds to go in a period. So other than that, we had our chances, and we had breakaways. Nazzy had a breakaway, and Phil had a partial breakaway. We had our chances. Our power play didn't score when it needed to, but the guys responded. So we took a team that's maybe in first place with a possible Vezina Hart Trophy winner and to a shootout.
Peter, what are you most disappointed about in the stretch down the end?
You know, you want to see more success, obviously. You know? And if you don't get it, you have to keep trying in different directions and different manners of motivation and where you're going to go. So, you know, as the stretch went down, you got to remember we traded away quite a few guys, and you know, you're trading Cody and Santarelli and Holzen and Winnick, Holzer and Winnick, and somebody else I can't remember. But you know, we changed quite a few people. We've got new people in the lineup, and at that point, you're trying to reintroduce people into the lineup, new bodies, new faces. But before that, you know, I was, you know, you would wish that there would be a better response and how we were playing and more winning situations.
Phil and Dion took a lot of heat, obviously. Can you share how you think they finished up tonight?
I think they, you know, they both were trying to win these games down the stretch. I mean, you have to take something positive out of being in a situation where you know you're not in the playoffs, you know you're not, have no chance of that. And, you know, that's why we take different approaches. We want to take it into a 7-game playoff series, so they're playing for something. You want them to play for pride. You want them to play for the fans. You want them to play. And so we got that at different times. But, you know, ultimately, there's still too much undisciplined defensive play. I mean, we didn't lose most of the games because of a lack of offense. We lack of defense.
Is this your most trying experience as a coach?
You know, I think there's been trying, and that's part of coaching. That's part of it. I mean, you if you want to have all good situations and all positives, we'd win the Stanley Cup every year. You know, everybody's kind of disappointed in their own way when you don't win, and there's only one winner. This is not easy. You're the leader, and you have to try to keep them motivated to practice harder and to do things differently, and to so it's trying. But I think that's part of being a leader. That's part of me being a person that has to be in the forefront.
Peter, some of the players were talking about the emotions they felt on the last day. Did you feel any emotions today going through the day and coaching tonight?
Do I feel
anything?
I'm a shell. No. There's nothing inside. No. You know, you try not to show emotions, and that's part of it. You try not to ride the highs, and you try not to ride the lows. And if you do that, you're not going to sleep at all. I mean, there's not a lot of sleep sometimes. So you have to try to keep it on an even keel. You have to try to keep the players at an even keel. Show up tomorrow, we're going to work. And take an approach where if everyone's lips hanging down and you're trying to get people away from feeling their own individual successes and failures into a team successes and failures. And that's part of bringing them into that team framework. And that's what you're trying to do when you're going down the stretch here, is trying to keep them into that team framework. And so to do that, you can't be jumping up and down all the time, and you can't yell at them every day. They'll tune you out. So you try different methods, and sometimes you raise your voice, sometimes you talk evenly, sometimes we do different things. That's part of coaching. That's part of what we do. And it wasn't successful, so, you know, I have to stand up and answer to that.
Easily, I'll acknowledge you're put in a tough situation here, but do you have any regrets about the way things turned out?
You know, if they ask me to do whatever they ask me to do, I'm going to do it. And if it doesn't work out for me, and obviously this is going to look bad on me, I think people know the situation that understand. So this is not an easy situation you step into. You try to change things. You try to stand up and be the person that should be there. And I believe in what I do. I believe in my leadership. I believe in my character. And you know, it looks bad. But, you know, I'm still going to be moving forward and doing the right things when I... hopefully in the next situation.
Why do you think they didn't respond in the early going to the change in coaching or the...
You know, individuals resist change. And that's the best way I guess I can say that. People don't want to change. They want to keep it in the comfort levels where they are.
Did you have a specific message to the group after the game or let it be?
No, I asked them to try to play hard, and let's try to win this game and put it down. We got our opportunities. We didn't win the game. We took it to a shootout. So I said, you know, we didn't win game 7. We lost. That kind of symbolizes the way other seasons went. We did not succeed where we needed to succeed, but there's lots of new approach for next year. There has to be. There has to be a better conditioned, a better attitude, a new approach to how we want to do things, and whatever the group is, this has to change. You know, you can't go about. You have to have a respect Toronto deserves should have the respect of a competitive team that goes to where they need to be. But they ultimately, this team had to change. If we continued right where we were in November, we might not make the playoffs. We might be fighting for the playoffs. And if you're in that situation and we're fighting for the playoffs, and where we make the playoffs, we weren't going to win. Is that what we want? Do we want to be competitive, or do we want to build something to win a Stanley Cup? That's the change that we have to make. Not just to be competitive, we have to start thinking about winning and have higher expectations. And our expectations have to go in a new direction, higher. Not here, not competitive, not okay. That's just not okay. And that's ultimately where we were. It was the same place as where it was the year before. They were competitive right there, maybe in the playoffs, out of the playoffs. It's not enough. This team deserves more.
What role are you going to have in the exit meetings Monday? Do you know yet?
I don't know. I really don't know.
So your plans for the next 48 hours are to...
I'm going to go home and sit next to my dog. You know, tomorrow, you know, I probably won't do a lot. We'll come in, and hopefully there'll be some meetings and some discussions. Players will have Monday. They'll have their physicals, exit physicals on Monday, and, you know, hopefully they'll start doing exit meetings with the management. As, at this point, I don't know where what my role is in that, so I do what I'm told. Anybody want to have a glass of wine?
Peter Horacek, his last press conference as the head coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs. I don't always buy that about the it's not good enough just to get better. We really got to do it right to win the whole thing. I still think there's a lot of merit just to get better. Getting better slowly but surely, you can get more better and more better and more better and more better. But the other one, Ozzie, you know, he talked about things. He even alluded to about being in better condition next year.
Yeah, and, you know, that's an interesting one to talk about and discuss because, you know, the word that I continue to hear is that Randy was too hard on the players. He worked them too hard. They were tired. And if you remember at the end of November, he started to give in and change a little bit and started to give optional practices, started to give guys a bunch of days off. And in retrospect, and I said this to you probably a month or 6 weeks or maybe even 2 months ago, I felt this team was out of shape. Mm. And they completely went the opposite way from what I think is needed when it comes to attention to off ice, you know, hard work. This team is not programmed to being a hardworking team. And so, again, that comes back to your personnel. They've got guys on that in that organization and on that team that are willing to work hard. We can talk about Stefan Robida, Roman Polak, David Booth. But those, again, are your support staff. Your top guys have to lead the way as far as working hard. And that's all I'm going to say about it. The best players on in this game are often the ones that are working the hardest on the ice and off the ice. And that's just the nature of the way this game is played. And I've told this to you before. I wish that some of these players, and I can tell you Phil, I can tell you Tyler Bozak, I can tell you Nazem Kadri, those guys in general, they get a lot of ice time, but I think it's not enough to apply yourself on the ice. You got to, in today's game, you got to do other things outside the game in order to compete at an elite level with the big boys.
Well, Peter Horacek's final press conference as head coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs will be Dion Phaneuf's final chat with the media as a Leaf captain. We'll hear from him when we get back and also talk about what went on around the National Hockey League. The Leaf season is over. A 4-3 shootout loss to the Montreal Canadiens. You're listening to Leafs Nation postgame, brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers, Gord Stellick, Mark Osborne on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Breaking down the game in a fanatic, obsessive, bordering on unhealthy manner. This is Leafs Nation Postgame on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Joffrey Leupel has to score here or the Canadiens win. Here he comes, right-handed shooter, into the top of the circle, stopped by Price, and the Canadiens win it.
That's the final Joe Bowen call of the season. Maybe apropos, it's a failed shootout attempt by Joffrey Leupel. Maple Leafs lose 4-3 in a shootout to the Montreal Canadiens tonight. Gord Stellick, Mark Osborne, welcoming you back to Leafs Nation postgame, brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Olay. Olay, olay, olay. Anyways, getting back to Carey Price, I mean, two big saves in the third period on breakaways, Phil Kessel and Nazem Kadri. Carey Price gets the win, 44 wins. He set a franchise record by winning game number 43 the other day, surpassing Jacques Plante and Kenny Dryden. And he's the first goaltender to lead the National Hockey League since Eddie Belfour back in 1991 in wins, save percentage, and goals against average. So it's been an incredible year for Carey Price and the Montreal Canadiens, for that matter. They end up maintaining the top seed in the Atlantic Division. So you know the Eastern Conference playoff matchup already, right? Do I have to help you with that, or are you okay with it as far as who plays who?
You can shed light to our listeners, let them know what's going on. That's appreciated. Also, I don't know if people remember Jamie Benn now getting the Art Ross Trophy with a four-point night tonight, so kind of a surprise that happened there. So what's set in the East for now? The West is still up in the air.
Well, it's not popping up for some reason. You do the math here.
Well, you know what? Let's hear from Dion Phaneuf and come back. Well, let's one more, because he could be somewhere else in the East or the West next year.
Okay.
His final time, and then we'll give some of the matchups and what's going on. Is possibly his final post-game chat as the Toronto Maple Leaf captain. Here's Dion Phaneuf.
Dion, what were the emotions like today, last game of the season, last time this group plays together?
There's a lot of different emotions. I be honest with you, didn't really sink in until I was on the way to the rink, and it's tough when you finish the season. You know, there's change. There's always going to be change in pro sport, and with the way that the year has gone and the season that we've had, there will be change, as there will be with a lot of teams. So, but it started to sink in when I was on the way to the rink, and more before the game.
What was sinking in? Just the thought it could be your last game, or what sort of thing?
I just said there's always a chance of change, and I understand that. I accept that, but I don't. I'll probably have to answer a lot of the same questions on Monday, but I understand with the way that this season has gone, the speculation, that I have to answer those questions. And but yeah, that crossed my mind.
Did that feeling kind of hit you maybe harder than you expected going in tonight?
I think there's a lot of different emotion that you look at how we played, where we were coming into these last few games. It's not a spot that you want to be in as a player or as a team. It's they're tough games to play in when you're that far out. And like I said, there's a lot of different emotions going on.
How much were you bothered by the booing tonight?
Well, I think a lot of it was, there was a lot of Montreal fans, and I get booed in Montreal. So every time I touch the puck, a lot worse than that. So I'd like to think that it was more the Montreal fans, because our fans have been great to me over my time here, and I'd like to think it was Montreal fans.
Yeah, what stood out to you about this group of guys? You had some close friends on the team, and it seemed like a close group. I mean, obviously the results weren't there, but
yeah.
Took you out for your 30th birthday the other night.
Yeah, felt 30 today, I'll tell you that. But yeah, I've been here a while, made lots of good friends, and it's tough. When the season ends, it's tough. So we'll talk more on Monday about that. But there's I thought we played hard tonight. We played, we finished it. We knew that our fans were coming to this game. There was a lot of energy in the building. The points were important for their team, and they want to obviously finish with as many as they possibly can going into the playoffs. But I thought that our team, we handled it professionally, and we played it out the way it should be done.
It's great to see Colton out there tonight. You had another nice body check, and normally there might have been a fight, but there wasn't in that particular shift.
Yeah.
Did he play a role?
I've got a lot of respect for Colton Orr. He's been a great teammate of mine for a lot of years here, so I thought it was great to see him be able to play in this last game. He obviously didn't have the year that he would have liked to or been where he wanted to be at, but he's been a professional. He came in here, and I just was really happy to see him. I saw his dad sit behind the bench, his wife. So Orji's a good friend of mine. I thought it was great to see him get that last game.
Well, 6 minutes and 6 seconds is what Colton Orr got in ice time tonight. But Dion Phaneuf, Mark Osborne, sounds like he's always a little bit close to the vest, but the end is near. Face the final curtain. I think he's.
Yeah, you know what? I think he's resigned in sync with the that, fact. Yeah, I think that's what the consensus would be. And of course, for a player like that, as you know, go back over the course of his career here in Toronto. I mean, we don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but I think he's come to the reality of, you know, his leadership, not the way the year would have wanted. He would have wanted the year to go, reflecting, I think, on just the failures over the course of time here. And, you know, only the player can honestly and adequately address that when and if that time eventually does come. But from an emotional perspective, I think he's spent. And that's the part that you've brought up before, just from a humanitarian standpoint. It's got nothing to do with, take all else aside, you know, it's hard for a guy like that. Imagine going to the rink, going to the restaurants, holding that on, knowing full well that the team probably tried to trade you at the trade deadline, and then try to perform with a sinking ship moving forward. It's been a challenge for Dion, no question.
Yeah, and certainly I know a guy, he gets $7 million a season, but it isn't fun, that part about it. And I'm not just saying the humanitarian. Let's face it, if you're going to change the leadership group, your leader's got to go. Whether he was a good leader or not a good leader, whatever, it just didn't work. And I would think he tried hard at it and is in sync with that kind of move. Now, looking into the playoffs, so I see Anaheim now is the top seed in the West as we get some results from out West. What do you have as far as the Eastern Conference matchups?
The East obviously is set, Gordon, and the number one seed, which would be the New York Rangers, are going to face off against Pittsburgh. So Pittsburgh ends up being the final seed in the Eastern Conference. Or Rangers-Pittsburgh, a little bit of a repeat from last year. If you remember, Rangers were down 3-1 in that series before they came back and won.
And booed off their ice. Booed off their ice at Madison Square Garden.
Yeah, booed off their ice. How about this one? Montreal plays the Ottawa Senators.
Wow.
So that's certainly going to be exciting. Tampa Bay hosts Detroit. And then the final series where Washington does get home ice advantage. And this is the one where I was a little bit confused. Washington 45, 26, and 11. The Islanders 47, 28, and 7. But you go all the way back to ROWs. And if they were tied with ROWs, it goes to head-to-head, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And then the goal differential. So Washington gets home ice advantage. And John Tavares up against Alexander Ovechkin. And you know what? We might as well then say the West is done as well. Because with Anaheim winning tonight, they become the number one seed, correct, in the Western Conference. So they'll face off against the Winnipeg Jets.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't like the Ducks against the Jets. I think the Jets are big and strong, and I think they're going to give Anaheim all that they can handle. So then on the other end of the equation would be St. Louis would face Minnesota.
Right.
Nashville hosts Chicago, so Nashville home ice advantage. And then, of course, Vancouver will host the Calgary Flames.
So a couple of all-Canadian matchups. So as if you want Canadian-based NHL teams to go far, two of them will be eliminated just by virtue of that. Montreal and Ottawa and Calgary and Vancouver will be eliminated in the first round and two will be moving on.
There you go. So you're not losing everybody.
Of the five. Yeah, you know, just as we mentioned, Monday we'll be down there for, I don't know what you want to call it, cleanup day, moving day, and hopefully a lot of clarity from Brendan Shanahan about a lot of things, but one will be Dave Nonis's status expected. He won't be back and chatting with Chris Johnson, us chatting and others like that. Other moves are to be made as well. It's saying that Dale Hunter, Kyle Dubas will be remaining within the organization. Steve Staios will return to his personnel job from being an assistant coach of the Maple Leafs. And guys like Rob Blake and Sean Burke are on Brendan Shanahan's radar, according to reports from people like Damian Cox.
Well, yeah, and you know what? And if those two guys in particular have aspirations as far as moving on in some kind of a more authoritative position, Rob Blake, of course, is one of the assistant general managers to in Los Angeles.
Dean Lombardi.
Dean Lombardi, thank you.
And that's what Ron Hextall was doing before.
Right, and Ron obviously became a first-year general manager, but yet Ron was on the job there for a number of years, and of course a couple of Stanley Cup wins.
Mm-hmm.
So, and Sean Burke, interesting position he's held in Phoenix with being an assistant to the general manager and the goaltending coach, but he's been around the game for a long time. And yeah, if he's got general manager's aspiration, then
I chatted with him extensively when Arizona was in town, the morning skate. He actually just came up, started, I mean, he's a Toronto kid, played for the Toronto Marlies. And a guy that Wendell Clark went first overall that year, and in having the second round first overall pick, we took a defenseman named Ken Spangler. But Sean Burke was on our radar, but we had taken Ken Reggett, Alan Bester, and Jeff Reese in the previous 3 years. But
here's the thing, you know, with and we're just speculating right now, you know, with Horchak, with Dave Nonis, but for all intents and purposes, you know, this committee that Brendan has developed or built as far as a group making decisions, the final decision is Brendan. Brendan's really gotten in and involved, unlike any other president. I don't know what Cam Neely is like with Peter Chiarelli, but he's very involved as well. So
I'd say John Davidson's involved, but
probably a lot of similarities there. But when you then come to a consensus as to, and we're not sure exactly because it hasn't been effectively communicated by the Maple Leafs as to what direction they are going in or what they're looking for or what's the identity of this team. We've heard culture change, so we don't know what that means. So if they're set on a certain player or a certain philosophy, then you go out and bring a new general manager in that could totally differ in philosophy. So then how do you adjust this whole hierarchy or structure that you have as a management team? People like Brendan Pridham or for Kyle Dubas, for that matter, when it comes to analytics, I have no problem with that. Information is good. But again, somebody that you bring in and he's now general manager, he's the one who steers the ship, I do believe. And that I think that doesn't really change in Vancouver with Trevor Linden. I think Jim Benning is the guy who's leading the charge there, the direction personnel-wise, right? Because of all of his experience in Boston.
Yeah,
you agree with that?
And Trevor Linden's sort of more of an off-ice guy, kind of like right. Luke Robitaille is in L.A.
Yeah.
Where Brendan here, you know, and when I've chatted with him the few times, he'll talk about my general manager does that, but I really see him as the general manager. I really see him as the hockey ops guy. He's not here to sell suites and boxes and seats and that stuff. He's here to get a first-class hockey organization in place, is my perception.
Well, you know what? Excuse me. When Brian Burke was here, I think Brian was doing a lot of things. And one of the reasons why he went out and brought in Dave Nonis, had Claude Lazelle, had Davey Poulin, was part of the business structure, I think, with corporate, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there was that part of the job that he was doing and entrusted, you know, some of the stuff that maybe Dave Nonis was better suited to, whether it's scouting, evaluating, going on the road and doing all that kind of stuff. So that's the job here in Toronto that's very demanding, right?
Well, yeah. And
as president.
And just as president of the Leafs is actually a new job. I mean, Brian Burke was president, general manager. But we'll find out more on Monday about a lot of things. And Brendan Shanahan and the Toronto Maple Leafs will look at game number one next season. It's been a great ride for all 82 games. We will be back from time to time, but certainly on Saturdays, Hockey Nation will continue from 5 to 7 p.m., and we'll be continuing our appearances on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Ozzy, it's been a blast working with you.
We're not done
year.
Yet. We're not done yet. We're going to be here next Saturday talking about the first round already and what happened on Monday.
I know we're not done, but the Leafs are done. Matt Brown also chirping in. Guys, get away. Get away from the box. We're done.
I'm done with you
Leafs
right
Nation
now.
Post-game.
I got to get home.
We're all done. Brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers, Gord Stellick. And a very done Mark Osborne on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
You've been listening to Leafs Nation Postgame with Gord Stellick and Mark Osborne. Brought to you by your local GTA Acura retailers. Visit yours today.